CoinWorld Plus is your new way to collect, manage your inventory, digitally authenticate coins, create your want list, buy and sell coins, and much more. Learn more about CoinWorld Plus at coinworldplus.com or download the app now at Google Play or the App Store.
Welcome to the CoinWorld Podcast with your host, Jeff Stark.
And as I've said from day one of this show, this is a big tent hobby. There's a lot of room for folks.
And Larry Jewett.
And learning has been such a tremendous amount of this journey.
The CoinWorld Podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of the CoinWorld Podcast. I'm Jeff Stark.
I'm Larry Jewett, but I am just so baffled by the fact that we're looking at the month of December already, and it just doesn't seem possible because, you know, it's January, we're doing the fun show, and a lot of things have happened. You know, it's been a blur. There have been a lot of great things going on in the world here, and here we are taking the time to reflect a little bit as we have another great episode for the CoinWorld Podcast here, and we thank you for being a part of this CoinWorld Podcast, as we hope that you've been educated or informed or at least entertained in some respects throughout the course of 2023. This is not the Auld Lang Syne issue right now, or the Auld Lang Syne episode, if you will, but this is the one that, you know, we're starting to realize, hey, man, there's been a lot of things going on in 2023, and we thank you for being a part with us along for the ride, and we've got a great show planned for you today.
Yeah, and, you know, you talk about what's happened this year. One of the things that's happened is the development of the Professional Numismatist Guild Next Gen program. And we talked to PNG Director John Feigenbaum and Amanda Blattle of CDN Publications. We get to talk about the PNG and what they're doing and the Next Gen program in an interview in just a little bit. So you want to hang around for that. But, you know, that's talking about what's looking forward and, you know, the hobby developing and growing in the future. There's a lot of stuff going on right now. I think, you know, one of the fun things I just got to write about was the new coin program from the Royal Mint in the United Kingdom. They contracted with an American coin designer, John Mercanti, to create a design that celebrates cooperation, the companionship, the camaraderie, if you will, between the U.S. and the United Kingdom. This is the British Lion American Eagle coin. And I guess I say coin, there's like seven different versions available if you know, different 1 ounce silver, kilo silver, that kind of, you know, different options. There's seven total, but that was fun to write about and to track that, you know, an American coin designer creating a design for another country. And it's not, you know, it's not one of those, I don't want to classify it as low tier, but, you know, this is the Royal Mint. This is a British coin. This is not some far-flung Pacific Island nation that, you know, subsist on, you know, that sells licensing to coins as a way to boost their treasury. This is legitimate, well-known international brand, if you will. And so that was really cool to see. And because of that the special nature of it, that's why, you know, the story ran as long as it did in the latest issue of CoinWorld. It's a page, but you know, to get all the details of the program and to talk about the design inspiration and what all is going on with the program, to me was important because, hey, you know, it's a British coin designed by John Mercanti. How cool is that?
Now, I mean, I don't want to let the cat out of the bag on this and don't want you to tip off anything that's actually in the article. I want folks to read the article. But my first thought here is, are we going to reciprocate and let one of the British designers design one of our coins? I mean, that would make sense. And then another question that comes to mind, I wonder how miffed some of the people who in Britain are. It's like, what, isn't our work good enough? I mean, I get the international cooperation and I like the feel good part of this thing, but it's just like almost blurring the lines, if you will. So, I mean, it's beautiful. There's no question. I've seen it. It's beautiful. It's going to be highly desired. John does nothing but quality work as it is. But it's kind of interesting that I wonder if our policies and the differences between the nations are going to allow us here on this side to see some of the work of the Royal Mint designers on U.S. type coins. I mean, I would think that there's a whole bunch of legislative and administrative things that would probably prevent that from happening in this country. But maybe I'm wrong. I've been wrong before.
Yeah, you know, the I think about the cooperation between world mints is never been at a higher level, I don't think, at least as long as I've been observing the market. You know, there were a couple of years ago, the Canadian Mint and the U.S. Mint did a set cooperation between the two mints with I can't remember the theme, but, you know, it was that was sort of the opening of the door to this cooperation. And I know, having been at the Mint Directors Conference in Ottawa, there was a lot of talk about cooperation and working together, both from a standpoint of trying to, you know, develop certain technologies and marketing strategies and actual coinage production things. So it's never been more relevant. It's never been more rich of a time for that kind of friendship between the nations, if you will. And I certainly think this is a story that will continue to be written. The book is not closed on this topic.
Well, perhaps we'll find that, you know, in the future, when we look back on this week in numismatic history, that maybe this is going to be one of those milestones that we're going to be talking about. But right now, I mean, it's just the way it is. We're going to have to see how it all plays itself out, because it's, as you mentioned, the cooperation is something that hasn't been seen, but certainly kinder times and the whole idea that we want to work together to help promote numismatics and help promote the understanding and the enjoyment of the coins that are created, and further, you know, to push the envelope, if you will, on designs. There's been a lot of talk about designs and, you know, what it's like. And, you know, when we go back to the stories on the from the mint's desire to bring the 1794 flowing hair back into the mix, and all the traditionalists like it, the modern guys not so much, and, you know, just different tops on that. So we'll just have to see how it all plays out. But I wonder if you've delved into the archives here and can help educate us a little bit about some of the things that happened, as this is a special time of year. And in the world, is Cyber Monday behind us, Giving Tuesday behind us, Black Friday behind us. It's just the time to start thinking about in different ways here as we go on into the month of December. What you got for us as far as this week in numismatic history?
Well, like you said the other day, this is now how the heck am I going to pay for this Wednesday?
Yeah, no doubt.
So, you know, there was something really fun that I saw in this week in numismatic history, that there's always more to the story. And so I know it's a couple days ago, but I want to go back to November 27th in 1986. So in both our lifetimes and the lifetimes of most people listening, or many people listening to this show, not everybody. We appreciate any of the folks who are younger in the audience. We love everybody here. But 1986, November 27th, that was when Canada authorized the minting of bronze-plated nickel dollar coins, and this was to begin in 1987. Well, the more to the story that this week in numismatic history does not tell you, but I know from past coverage, is that the design for that coin was going to carry the canoe The Voyager canoe that was seen on the large dollar size coins back to 1935. Except they didn't, because the dies, the Royal Canadian Mint sent both dies from, I'm trying to think if it was Ottawa to Winnipeg, that's how it went. But they sent them in transit, and the dies got stolen. And so they scrapped their plans to issue that design, and they came up with a new design, which is the now famous Loon dollar, the dollar showing the loon bird. And that gives us the nickname for the dollar coinage of loonies. And then as a riff off of that, when the $2 coin was introduced in 1996, then they were called toonies. So loonies and toonies. We would not have had that had those dies not been stolen, the design's been changed. It's, you know, everything's a chain reaction, sort of. It's like that old, you know, the ripple effect, the butterfly and all that, you know. I mean, it's just amazing to think how the future changed because of this. And it was all authorized on November 27th, 1986. And, you know, what would you call it? The canoe dollar and the toonie? That doesn't rhyme. So I just found that interesting, especially we've talked a lot about Canada here recently. In fact, the trivia last week was involving Canada. But that to me was notable and interesting, certainly from an international, talking about international cooperation and international coverage. So there you go.
Oh, that is interesting to me too, because you sometimes wonder why designs change. And sometimes it's out of whim. Sometimes it's out of necessity. Sometimes it's mandated based on legislative action. But I never heard of one until you told this story, and thank you for sharing it with us, that was mandated because it's one of those now what do we do type things where, you know, it's just like, well, we didn't, you know, didn't have a backup plan for something like this, and now we've got to move on. And then created a pop culture phenomenon, because once that bird design came out, again, keeping with the theme that Canada likes to have about natural type activities, the canoers, and then you've got now something they would have seen on one of their canoeing trips, then you've got, you know, and somebody gave it the name. It'd be interesting to find out who's the one that first coined the term. And then it was, you know, like you say, it was just a natural transition when the $2 coin came out, just to move it on. And it's just now become part of the vernacular. I mean, that's just what it's referred to. When we were in Canada in October, they said, you know, when I was making one of the transactions, and it's like we were talking the fact we were Americans and we were in Canada, and he talked about the coins, and he dumped out his coin jar and told me for special coins that you need to look for. And a toonie was one of them. So it was just kind of neat. I've always had a soft spot in my heart for Canadian coins. Just had a friend bring a bunch of world coins to me, and I ended up buying all the Canadians off of them just because they were Canadian. They had no value. I just bought them because they were Canadian. So there you go.
Awesome.
So, I only do that during hockey season, though. So
Okay. Yeah. Well, maybe one day you'll get back there and you can spend those coins and trade them for some of the many, many circulating commemorative designs that are out there in circulation. There's so many different World War II and Oscar Peterson, jazz pianist, and Elsie McGill, the pilot, I think, during one of the world wars. And just there's lots of cool stuff. They do a lot of fun things. I have right next to me here the three different blue nose designs from a couple years ago on the dime, including a colorful version. So there's lots of cool stuff in Canadian coinage. But be that as it may, it's probably time to take a look back to this week in coin world history. And we want to go to 2015, not that long ago. Went that year because that was the year that Gray Sheet was sold and John Feigenbaum, CDN Publishing, took over. And since we got to talk to John for this week's interview, that it just made sense to me. But in the December 1st, 2015 issue, what was the cover story of this December monthly? Well, it was all about the 12 days of Christmas. And I got to relive the story that I wrote 8 years ago now. And we looked at 12 different numismatic objects sort of related to Christmas, talked about some special stuff that had been issued that year, but also got to talk about some classic stuff, including the Washington Crossing the Delaware quarter. Well, what does that have to do with Christmas? Well, as you may recall from your history class, that happened on Christmas. The sailors, soldiers, if you will, they slipped across the river and surprised the British. And they did that on Christmas. So that was sort of the capstone to the article, but it was fun to see some of the objects and relearn about them. Probably my favorite is, was this idea that an ancient coin shows the Star of Bethlehem, according to astronomer and coin collector Michael Molnar. He believes that a bronze coin of Roman Syria issued by Quintus Cecilius Metellus Cretius Silanus, boy, that's a mouthful. Anyway, governor of Syria from 13 to 17 AD, depicts the celestial event described as the Star of Bethlehem. He, Molnar, has a book entitled The Star of Bethlehem, The Legacy of the Magi, which has been acclaimed by other astronomers and translated into several languages. Molnar explains that Aries, a ram, was the sign of the Jews and that ancient stargazers would have watched for the Star of Bethlehem in Syria. So it goes on and on, relates how this this event was believed to have happened. And you can go find a coin that shows the Star of Bethlehem, which famously guided the travelers to visit the newborn Christ child. So that was fun. There's also coins of some of the believed or supposed three wise men. One of those reported was believed to be Malachus, the son of Aretas the IV, whose coins can be collected today. So it was just a wonderful walk down memory lane for me. Probably the other favorite piece from that is, of course, you know, Santa Claus on paper money. He's on not geld, he's on U.S. paper money. But the famous and how appropriate the World War One medal series that was issued annually, created by German designer Carl Goetz. This celebrated the Christmas truces of World War One, and there's famous events during the war, and the last 1918 medal from the series actually, I believe, has something about like peace and finally at home. So it's fun to look at an event and a moment through all these different lenses. And so for me, that's what I wanted to highlight from the issue. How about you, Larry?
Well, I mean, as one who has been embarking on this campaign to acquire through circulation all of the state quarters in the America the Beautiful quarters, it was just interesting to read a story that I believe was credited to Joe O'Donnell regarding the launch ceremony for the last of the 2015 America the Beautiful quarters. Now, this was about the Saratoga National Historic Park quarter, and this particular event drew 1,400 people to a launch ceremony, including 500 students. And just looking at that going, wow, I mean, people were really getting into this back then, as they distributed $27,000 worth of quarters at that particular event. So, and there's pictures of this packed house where a lot of the people were sitting here and just getting the idea that, yeah, we've started to see some of the quarter launches going on recently, the Jovita Adard in San Antonio happening, and also the events that happened earlier this year regarding Eleanor Roosevelt and also out in Hawaii. So it's kind of seeing that the momentum that we're seeing in 2023, I'd love to see it get back up to the kind of reaction that they had in New York for the Saratoga releases. This picture is just fascinating with people standing up because there's just simply no room to sit. And it's great to see that. Of course, civic leaders coming out there. This was a sense of civic pride, if you will, on this December 2015 issue. But it's kind of neat to see that something like then the program was well into its maturity at that point. So just the idea that there was some enthusiasm around this and 500 students involved, again, a great way to get the folks involved in it. Saratoga Quarter was the 30th of 56. So again, right about the halfway mark or so, but still for these folks in New York, that was a time to remember. And many of those who were there probably still can recall, you know, going over there and meeting Mint personnel and dignitaries that were involved in this. And that was just kind of a feel good story that happened in the December 2015 issue. And I always like the feel good ones. Love those.
Awesome. Well, very good. So now that I've heard that from you, I think it's time to put you to the test. Last episode, I asked you a question. Now it is time for you to answer. The question was, the Royal Canadian Mint's prime responsibility other than coinage is what?
I would think they'd have to have something to do with some of the metals, maybe the working with the metals, refining the metals, that type of thing. That would be my thought.
Okay. Would you care to elaborate any?
Oh, of course not.
Okay.
You know, I'm coming from the bleachers in the outfield on this one. So, I mean, my throw wouldn't even get to second base if I tried to elaborate. So, I mean, something I would think something along the line about cooperative work to work with miners and work with mining companies to develop the product that's used, silver, gold, that type of thing.
Okay. So now you've said enough. I'll give you full credit. The full correct answer is refining domestically mined gold. So Canada has active gold mining operations, and the Royal Canadian Mint is the place where that gold is refined, and the Maple Leafs help create a market for the domestically mined gold. That's why you have the Perth Mint in Australia. That's why you have the South African Mint in South Africa. A lot of these mints, really their remit, their reason for being was around the idea that, hey, we have this item that we're pulling out of the ground and it has value. Now we need to turn it into something, you know, and send it down the chain. You know, there's always that value add proposition, right? You know, you can sell the ore, but if you refine it and stamp it, then you can sell it for more than you could sell the ore for. And so it's all about capturing that little nugget, no pun intended, of economic benefit. So that is the correct answer. Now, I saw one of these for sale this week, so I'm going to ask you. I did not get it. I saw it, I want to say, in a Facebook group. But it's one of my favorites. So I want to know what U.S. paper money note. Even though the question doesn't specify U.S. paper money, I'm telling you that much. What U.S. paper money banknote is known as the porthole note?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just saw that too.
Yeah. So okay. That's on the Coin World trivia game, that's expert level question. But I think, you know, for you to get it, there are several components to the answer. So just be mindful that it's not just, oh, a blank denomination. No, there's, you've got to tell me when it was issued and all that. So,
right.
Yeah. So anyway, that is the question that we'll get the answer next time. Think about that while you're staying tuned to the interview with John Feigenbaum and Amanda Blattel, John Feigenbaum with PNG, as well as, of course, CDN, and Amanda with CDN. And she gets to talk about the PNG's Next Gen program, which is all about serving younger folks who are transitioning into the dealer role. Here that interview is.
Welcome to the Coin World Podcast. It's our pleasure to have a representative from the CDN Publishing Group that has made their way into the news here lately. John Feigenbaum is on hand here today. John is also the executive director of the Professional Numismatist Guild. So we're going to kind of talk a few things here, and we're going to also offer another opportunity at another date to talk about a great program that's going on. But first, John, I got to ask you, first of all, thank you for taking the time to come and be a part of the Coin World Podcast here today.
Well, thank you, guys. I mean, it's a real pleasure to join you. I really appreciate it.
Well, you know, you made some big news. You made some headway in 2023 in a lot of ways. But one of the biggest things that we think about here is the announcement that was made just prior to the Baltimore Whitman Expo, is that CDN has purchased Whitman. And I want to talk a little bit about that, because there was naturally some curiosity and naturally some raised eyebrows when that happened. Has this been in development long, John?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was quite a long process. In fact, like most of those kinds of complex deals that you do, by the time it happens, you've almost lost that whole like gotcha moment, how exciting it is. So like I have to look back in my mind to think how exciting it is, because by the time we got to the finish line, it was like, oh, I just need a cocktail. But it was it is tremendously exciting. And we'd been working on these details. The Whitman folks are just wonderful people. The Anderson family and Mary Burleson over at Whitman and I have been talking for about, I would say, over a year on this matter. And there were a lot of details to cover, but it was very familial, very congenial. And it was really important to the Andersons that that the company was transferred to a friendly buyer who was going to really honor the love of numismatics the way they did. You know, they didn't want to just sell to a private equity group or something like that. And so I feel very like a burden in that regard, not a bad burden, but I feel, you know, that it's my duty to carry this on. And I've talked to numerous authors in the last couple of weeks since the whole news was announced about people concerned, what's going to change. And my answer to them is, you know, nothing's going to change. Only positive changes anyway. You know, we'll do, if anything, more books. We want to do more publications related to numismatics and other projects that we can do. We might reach into other verticals, collectible hobbies, like maybe playing cards or things like that, and comics. But we're not going to scale back in any way on numismatics, because we really love this hobby. And that was also, like I said, important to the Anderson family.
And I think it's important because just people say, what's going to change? Well, there's really no need to change anything, is there?
It's funny when you do have conversations, then there were, you know, we obviously dealt under a big cloak of secrecy about this. We couldn't talk about it. And there's a lot of things you really can't know about a company when you acquire. But I got to say that when I went down to Alabama, finally, you know, in the months prior to the closing, and met with the people there and saw the facility and the, you know, business that they run, it is a beautiful business. These are just really impressive people who built a very solid business. And it's, like I said, it's really exciting, but it's a great platform to launch from. There's so much more I think we can do, and that the hobby, you know, is desirous of. So we're looking forward to doing more.
Well, CDN publishing has always been one of those. It's at the forefront of the information, and certainly having a group now that's working on books, working on this, more or less complements all the work you've been doing with CDN.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm glad you feel that way. I mean, we certainly went into it thinking that, but it's been a real pleasure hearing that from many people in the business that think, yeah, that's a natural fit. And it really is a natural fit because, you know, while the gray sheet's really largely in the wholesale part of the business and, you know, Whitman is largely in the retail side of the business, it's just a perfect marriage in that regard.
And this comes on the heels of the fact that earlier this year, you ascended to the position of executive director of the Professional Numismatist Guild. I want to spend some time now talking about that, John, because you're a man of action, it seems like, because right away, you took control of this organization that's been around since 1955, and you've started to make some headway in today's market. Congratulations on that.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Be careful what you wish for is all my advice to everybody.
That's always the case where it is right there. But, you know, it had to be difficult to move into a position where a gentleman had been there almost 30 years and to come in and take that challenge. I'm sure that the membership had a lot of questions.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Bob Brueggemann and I have been friends for about the 25 years that I've been a member as well. So this was just a natural situation. And you know, Bob was looking to retire and there weren't a lot of people, as you can well understand, who are knowledgeable about the, you know, numismatic trade, you know, from the dealer perspective that I've been, but aren't in the numismatic trade any longer in terms of buying and selling coins. Cause I think that sort of like CDN, you wouldn't want somebody who's a coin dealer as the executive director. There'd be some conflicts there possibly. And, but as a publisher of data, I don't really have skin in the game as far as the other dealers are concerned. I've always tried at the gray sheet to play a Switzerland-like role. And I think what I wanted to prove, I wanted to further myself in terms of my education and of being a leader of an organization of coin dealers. I've never really done anything quite like that. And I thought that would be quite a challenge. But to be fair, the board is just amazing. They've been easygoing. And in fact, just yesterday, we passed an entire, the board unanimously passed a new set of bylaws that are basically bringing a 20-year-old set of bylaws up to date. Things like, you know, faxing is no longer a mandatory way of voting or things like that. But there's a lot of little details that the organization needed. And primarily, we're going to be, you know, getting some information out because we're going to do some new programs designed to get more coin dealers, more younger dealers involved and make it possible for people in the industry who are not directly coin dealers involved. So, for example, Amanda is now a member of the PNG, but we should have lots of Amandas in the PNG. People who are in our industry and young, but not yet participating as dealers. And that's okay because our industry is now big enough that you have, you know, you have social media players, you have marketing people, you know, at large firms, you have writers at publications like Coin World. Everyone, in my opinion, should be part of this organization that's within the, you know, within the PNG or within the numismatic trade, yet PNG had not embraced that. So that's the largest change in the new bylaws.
And there are some needs, obviously, as you mentioned here, for modernization or updating. But one of the things that doesn't need to be touched, in my opinion anyway, and that is the code of ethics. I mean, I think PNG was built on the code of ethics that made it necessary for you to maintain a certain standard, which gives the customer and the collector a peace of mind.
Correct. And the code of ethics is still there and strong. And in a nutshell, the code of ethics puts the PNG member apart from a non-PNG member by saying you will abide by these special ethics. You will, you know, carry yourself honorably. You will, you know, your checks will clear, and if they and or you will treat people, you know, with respect and so on. And if you fail to do that, you will no longer be a member of the PNG. And we need that in our industry, especially in this wild west of, you know, eBay sellers who are not necessarily honorable. How do you differentiate when you're a buyer on some of these big social media platforms where everybody can be a seller? We want to say to the world, it's the PNG members you should be doing business with. And we've always kind of thought that, but now there's just so many new sellers who are great people to do business with that aren't members that we need to catch up and get them in there.
I mean, and some people don't realize the APMD is part of this as well.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you're dealing in precious metals, you've got that same guarantee right there. And I especially like the fact that it is a self-policing organization that takes care of things, you know, and can handle that. But you'd mentioned earlier about younger dealers. And I think there was a perception at one point that the PNG was only for those who've been in the hobby for a long period of time. I think you have taken steps to erase that mentality.
Absolutely. And that's the biggest change that we're making, as I said, is we're changing the basic rules about getting in. You still have to be endorsed by, I think, as many as four other dealers to get in. So we're careful about who we let in, but you don't have to have such a large percentage of net worth as you did in the past. In fact, we're sort of striking that because that's a really antiquated way of looking at someone's value to a hobby. And we're also changing some fundamentals. If, for example, I think in the past that you had to spend 80% of your time as a full-time coin dealer. Well, we know that's not practical in 2023. So what we want now are sharp young people who are energetic, and they may spend 50% of their time selling cards and comics and 10% of their time selling coins. And if they're honorable dealers, you know, we want them in the PNG. So we're going to spend a lot of effort trying to get all these new faces and respected people in the hobby into the organization. But we will also have to police the people within the organization carefully as well.
And it seems like you're also embarking upon an increase in activities such as seminars and ways. I mean, there've been polls that have been put out there among the dealers to find out how they protect their assets, different things like that. This is not just a club that meets once a year. This is an aggressive form of pushing the hobby and business forward, I would believe.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're having at the Fun Show in January of 24, we're going to have a coin dealer security seminar. So we're trying to add value to the membership, and also, you know, and it's open to everybody, by the way. And then I can also announce, as a similar example, that the Central State Show, which is in March of next year or April, I'm sorry, it's in April of next year. You know, PNG has often had a PNG day at Central States. And we will have that again this year, thanks to the Central States Board voting us and approving us. Thank you very much. But also we changed it so that non-PNG dealers may also have a table at the Central States PNG day, because we're basically opening up our arms and saying, please come to the show. You can participate in the show. You'll see why it's better to be a PNG member than not. There's a discount for PNG members, but it's more reasonable for everyone to be a part of this day, because we want to demonstrate that we are not being exclusive. We want to change exclusive to inclusive. That's the big change.
John, we appreciate the amount of time you've spent with us here today. I know you're quite busy here, and I do appreciate the time you've come by. Any final word of something I might have skipped over, anything?
No, I just want to, take that moment to introduce Amanda Blattle, who's really been wonderful. You know, we Mark Salzberg had called me about 6 months ago and told me he had, you know, a fantastic idea. How could we execute at PNG to do something to bring young numismatists who are already sort of in the hobby, doing business dealer to dealer, but not really knowledgeable about what it means to be a professional? And so my first thought was, you know, Amanda, who works with me here at CDN Exchange, I said, you know, Amanda has really got a great rapport with all these young new minds that are in the business. And I asked Amanda, I said, my first thought is we can only do this if Amanda's interested. So I think it's a perfect way for me to hand off here and introduce Amanda.
Well, thank you, John. Thank you for the introduction. Thank you for the information. Amanda, welcome to the Coin World Podcast. And
hi.
Well,
yeah.
These are definitely exciting times right here, because I know you do a lot of work with the organization. We see you out at the trade shows. You get a lot of this face to face. And but now, hearing about the next gen program, I'm not going to steal your thunder by reading a press release here. Tell us, in your words, about the next gen program.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to touch base on the Next Gen program, it's a program to guide the youth to success in numismatics by connecting interested young adults with mentors specifically by using the PNG clout, which we just touched on with John here, to build those relationships within the numismatic organizations, but not just domestically. We want to reach it worldwide as well. We want to open the doors to young numismatists or young dealers that are coming in and are a little bit lost, to partner with these lovely dealers that have been in the industry and have set the industry for the past 50 to 60 years. It's kind of their ticket to get insight and information on how to be a successful numismatist. But it just doesn't stop at coin dealers. You know, they can go into article writing, they can go into currency dealing. And it's a really exciting program that I'm happy to be the sort of captain on to steer the ships for these young kids.
When the program was announced, how was it received by the quote unquote establishment?
Yeah, that's a great question. When we first announced this program, we really launched it back A&A this past year in 2023. And the response for the program was actually outstanding. I was even shocked with the response of the program. When I had just briefly mentioned it and I didn't, you know, get anything out about the program yet, really, in A&A, I had people coming up to the table asking me questions about it. Where can they apply? They have kids that are interested. How old do you have to be? You know, how can they get started? And the response has been immense, truly, which tells me that there's a need for it. And I'm excited to kind of be headstrong with this and push it for these young adults that need guidance in this industry.
Well, I have to ask, I'm going to jump in here. You know, there's already the A&A Summer Seminar. Wintercoin University has popped up in recent years. What does NextGen offer that is differentiates itself from some of the platforms that already exist?
Absolutely. That's another wonderful question. So one of the main bases with A&A Summer Seminar and WitterU, which are both wonderful programs, by the way, is those are educational-based programs. They hold classes, and they do have really awesome people that lead those programs as well. Some of those are actually some of the mentors in my program. But we're not educational or class-based. What we're doing here is we're here to protect, guide, and accelerate the professions of the youth in numismatics by integrating them into the actual community. So with WitterU and A&A Summer Seminar, those are wonderful little educational classes and programs to, you know, in the summer take. And then after that, you know, they go back to school or they go back home. But with my program, with the mentorships, I'm going to give you somebody that you can contact through a phone message, you can contact through email, you can see at shows, and we're going to be hitting objectives throughout the year. And they're not, you know, it's not like a class, it's not like school. It's going to be really simple things to work on, skills to develop on, asking your mentors, you know, is this a good path to go on? Should I go here? Or maybe I should go here. I'm making this mistake right now. Did you make a mistake like this? How did you move past it? How are you moving forward? So we're integrating these kids actually into this industry. We're not, you know, giving them the educational, you know, foundation that WitterU and A&A Summer Seminar are, which, you know, hopefully I might even be able to partner with them. That would be awesome. But we're taking them and we're giving them jobs. We're providing them insight, wisdom, professionalism, things like that.
So the most success for a young numismatist will come if they have an interest in business, not just an interest in collecting.
So it could be an interest in collecting. It could be an interest in business. Maybe they just have an interest in grading. Maybe they just have an interest in writing articles for numismatists. They might be into social media. And my goal is to match those interests with these young kids coming on. Or if they don't even have an interest and they have no clue what they're doing, I'm kind of here to guide that and say, what do you like to do? What are the things that interest you in this community? And who is that one person or maybe a couple people I can pair with this person and help them not only give insight to the young mentees coming on board, but these mentees are going to give generational outlook and insight to the mentors that have been in this industry, are still in this industry, and run businesses today.
old dogs, new tricks. Okay. Exactly. Got that part. Yeah. Exactly. So now is there, if you're a young numismatist and you're interested in the next gen program, I guess the first question is, and usually they save it for last, but is there a charge for anyone who wants to get in this program?
Absolutely not. There is no charge for the mentees coming on board. I'd like to touch that the ages for the program do range about 15 to later 20s, 27, 28 years old. So 15 to about 28 years old is the mentee age that I have in the program right now. As far as the mentors do have to be a PNG member. That way we do have a sort of foundation laid out for integrity, honor, and respect in the community for the mentors. How you can apply if you're interested in being a mentor or mentee is we do have a lovely website on www.pngdealers.com. Under the Next Gen page, there are applications which are super easy to fill out, and anyone that is interested can apply to be either a mentor or a mentee.
Go ahead, Jeff. I'll get my question later.
Okay. Yeah. I just am curious, is this going to be done like on a calendar basis, or does this, if I were younger and going in that direction, I joined the program. Am I in the program until I age out? Am I in the program for a year? How long am I, do I get to partake of these benefits, I guess?
Yeah, absolutely. So we don't really have a timeline right now on that. And as we've, kind of been going through this program, it's something that's currently still in development. So we're changing as needed. We're receiving feedback from what these younger dealers need, what the mentors are looking for as we progress. Right now, there is no set, in stone, void fill, right? So, you filled everything, get out, right? My plan on this is to bridge them into having a PNG membership at some point when they reach a specific age and they're successful in their numismatic careers. That would be my goal, and to kind of bridge them off into maybe one day even being a mentor after they're done with the program. That would be amazing. And just keep them in the loop of helping the next generations, bridging this generational gap that we see in this industry right now. And just helping each other throughout.
Is a mentor required to spend a certain amount of time with a mentee, or is that just circumstantial?
Not necessarily. The program's pretty open. So these objectives I'm going to hit are developing skills or, touching base on professionalism, things like how to trade, even just the basics between coins and currency. So it depends really, and it's personalized per mentee, what the mentees are needing, what the mentors are looking for. It's going to be flexible based about who are members and what they're looking for or what they're looking to get out of in the program. Currently, those objectives, we're not meeting every week or anything crazy like that. It's really open, and it's supposed to be fun, and it's supposed to be relaxed, and it's supposed to be a safe place for these young dealers or young numismatists to come to feel safe and to get answers and have questions answered and to get guidance in this industry.
Is it strictly one-on-one, or can a mentor mentee more than one person or vice versa?
You can do both. If they preferred it, let's say a mentor comes on board and I don't have a lot of time and I just want one person. I'm not looking to, spread between 3 to 4 people. What I'll do is I'll say, okay, well, I have a mentee that I think is perfect for you. I'm going to pair you up with them. I'm going to give them your contact information. I may even set up a Zoom conference with them so they can get to know each other. If they can't do that, maybe we'll even meet at a show. We do host events at a lot of the shows, and we'll get together and they'll get to know each other. And then what my program does with the objectives is a sort of a map to help guide the mentors and how to be good mentors if they're not really sure the questions to ask or the plans to draw out. So we hit those objectives, and with the mentors, if they decide that they want more mentees, then I just leave that open as I get applications in, and I'll just pair them up. And like I said, it's flexible. So, if a mentee or a mentor is not working out, we can change it. And that's the cool thing about it is, we can match other people up who might, have better chemistry together or have a better interest. Or if the interest changed, we can, exchange things around. So it's nothing's, permanent. Nothing is super strict. It's a really fun, open program that we're changing and modifying as needed as we get feedback from the community about what they're looking for.
If I was younger and part of the program, I'd probably have to have three different mentors a year as many times as I change my collecting interest.
Hey, and but, we can work that out for you. Not a problem.
Well, you can't turn back time, so that's not going to happen.
I know. If only. Definitely. If only, yep. But it's going to be fun. So even if, you know, they just have one mentor, the cool thing is at these shows, we do host events and you can talk to whoever you want. You can get insight from whoever you want. You can reach out to whoever you want at any time. Nothing is closed off. We keep it really open, really light, and really fun.
Amanda, once again, give us the website and the contact information that if you want to be a mentor or a mentee, you have a child that wants to, is in the proper age range that wants to learn more about it, this is a perfect way to do so. Tell us how they can get connected.
Yeah, of course. So you can apply to be a mentee or a mentor if you're a PNG member as a mentor. You can go to www.pngdealers.org. There is a Next Gen page there. You can simply apply, or you can even just email me at ABLATTOMEL. That's ablitzhell@graysheet.com.
Amanda Blattel has been with us here today talking about, she's the chair of a new program under the Professional Numismatist Guild called Next Gen. Get used to it because you're going to hear a lot about it here. So Amanda, thanks again for taking the time to educate us here and good luck with the quest. And certainly we stand ready to help you as this program is going to be tremendous for the growth of our hobby and business. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Larry and Jeff. I appreciate your time.
And that was our interview with John Feigenbaum and Amanda Blattel. We thank them for joining us. We thank you for listening. Hopefully you can participate in a mentor role or a mentee if you're out there looking for opportunities qualify in that age group and everything. If you're looking to get into the dealer side, it's certainly something that is beneficial and really exciting that they have taken this on.
Yes, indeed. I want to thank both of them for being a part of this program here and certainly look forward to the growth of what's going to be happening. We talk about how the year's winding down and just get the idea of what the future lies for us here as we continue on with the Coin World podcast. I want to thank you once again for being a part of today's activity here. We welcome your suggestions as we will be continuing on. We will take a slight break in the middle of December. We will be back with you next week and then taking a break on the week of that ends on the 15th. But we hope to be back before the holidays and kind of carry you through into 2024. Again, we do appreciate the fact that you're here with us on a regular basis. And thank you for your past suggestions, your past contributions. And certainly don't forget to tell your friends who are in the numismatic world about how they can find out information about the Coin World podcast. Want to thank everybody for being a part of it here today. And it's come to that time once again. Jeff, thanks so much. As we remind our listeners, until next time,
happy collecting.
Thank you for listening to the Coin World podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and we'll see you next week.
CoinWorld Plus is your new way to collect, manage your inventory, digitally authenticate coins, create your want list, buy and sell coins, and much more. Learn more about CoinWorld Plus at coinworldplus.com or download the app now at Google Play or the App Store.